Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Storytelling Hour at EnlightenRadio.org. This is your co-host, Stasi Olkowski, who's sailing alone today. Fanny Crawford is at a family reunion in the great city of Philadelphia. I'm so used to saying Pittsburgh. Thanks to Andy Offit Irwin for opening up the show with Tarry Here. And today is August the 5th. The year is flying by. And today, we're going to have stories, classical fairy tales from one of my favorite authors. And also one or two short stories by a modern writer who is becoming well known, especially because she allows storytellers to use her stories, which is a great gift. So, with no further ado, let's just jump into it. Classic fairy tales. And what could be any more classic than one of Hans Christian Andersen's most famous tales, The Emperor's New Clothes. Many years ago, there lived an emperor who was so terribly fond of beautiful new clothes that he spent all his money on dressing elegantly. He didn't care about his soldiers, didn't care about the theater or driving in the woods. All he cared about was showing off his new clothes. He had a dress coat for every hour of the day, and just as people say of a king that he's in the council chambers, here they always said the emperor is in the dressing room. In the big city where he lived, everything was exceedingly pleasant, and every day scores of strangers appeared. One day, two swindlers arrived. They claimed to be weavers and said they knew how to weave the loveliest cloth imaginable. Not only were the colors and patterns extraordinarily beautiful, but the garments they sewed from the cloth had the peculiar property of being invisible to any person who was unfit for his position or inexcusably stupid. What lovely clothes they must be, thought the emperor. By wearing them, I could find out which men in my kingdom are unfit for the positions they hold. I could distinguish the clever from the stupid. Yes, I must have these clothes woven for me at once. And he gave the two swindlers a great deal of money so they would begin their work. And they did set up two looms and pretend to work. But there was nothing at all on their looms. They promptly demanded the finest silk and the most magnificent gold, which they stuffed into their own bag. Then they set at the empty looms and worked far into the night. I'd certainly like to know what progress they've made with the cloth, thought the emperor. But he actually felt a bit uneasy about the idea that someone who was stupid or not suited to his position wouldn't be able to see it. Now, he certainly didn't think he needed to be afraid for his own sake, but he still wanted to send someone else first to see how things were going. Everyone in town knew what a wondrous power the cloth possessed, and everyone was eager to see how inferior or stupid his neighbor was. I'll send my honest old minister over to the weavers, thought the emperor. He's the best one to see how the cloth looks, because he is wise, and no one is more attentive to his position. Then the venerable old minister went to the hall where the two swindlers sat working at the empty looms. God save us, thought the old minister, and opened his eyes wide. I can't see a thing. But he didn't say that. The two swindlers invited him to come closer and asked him if it wasn't a beautiful pattern and lovely covers. Then they pointed to the empty loom, and the poor old minister opened his eyes even wider. But he couldn't see a thing, because there was nothing to see. Good Lord, he thought, could I be stupid? I've never thought so, and no one must find out. Am I unfit for my position? No, it won't do at all for me to say that I can't see the cloth. Well, you're not saying anything about it, said the one who was weaving. Oh, it's exquisite. Quite the most charming of all, said the old minister, peering through his glasses. That pattern and those colors, yes, I shall tell the emperor that it pleases me no end. That's very gratifying, said both weavers. And then they mentioned the colors by name and the unusual pattern. The old minister listened carefully so he would be able to repeat everything when he returned home to the emperor. And he did. Then the swindlers demanded more money, more silk and gold. They needed it for the weaving. They stuffed everything into their own pockets. Not a thread was put on the loom, though they continued as before to weave at the empty loom. The emperor then sent over another venerable official to see how the weaving was going and whether the cloth would soon be finished. The same thing happened to him. He looked and he looked, but since there was nothing but the empty looms, he couldn't see a thing. Well, isn't it a beautiful piece of cloth, said the two swindlers, as they displayed and described the lovely pattern that wasn't there at all. I know, I'm not stupid, thought the man. Am I supposed to be unfit for my position? That would certainly be ridiculous, but I can't let on. Then he praised the cloth that he couldn't see, and assured them of his joy at the beautiful colors and the lovely pattern. Yes, it's quite the most charming of all, he told the emperor. Everyone in town was talking about the magnificent cloth. Then the emperor wanted to see it for himself, while it was still on the loom. With an entire host of hand-picked men, including both of the venerable officials who had been there before, he went over to visit the two cunning swindlers, who were now weaving with all their might, but without thread or yarn. Yes, isn't it magnificent, said both of the venerable officials. Just look, your majesty, what a pattern, what colors. And then they pointed at the empty loom, because they thought that surely the others could see the cloth. What's this, thought the emperor. I can't see a thing. This is terrible. Am I stupid? Am I unfit to be the emperor? This is the most horrible thing that could happen to me. Oh, it's very beautiful, the emperor said. I give it my highest approval. And he nodded contentedly and looked at the empty loom. He didn't want to say that he couldn't see a thing. The whole entourage he had brought with him looked and looked. They could make no more of it than all the others. Yet, like the emperor, they said, oh, it's very beautiful. And they advised him to wear these splendid new clothes for the first time during the great procession. It's magnificent, exquisite, excellent, passed from mouth to mouth. Everyone was so genuinely pleased, the emperor awarded each of the swindlers a knight's cross to put in his buttonhole and the title of Weaving Squire. Now, the swindlers stayed up all night long, with more than 16 candles burning, before the morning of the procession. Everyone could see that they were busy finishing the emperor's new clothes. They pretended to take the cloth off the loom. They cut at the air with big shears, sewed with needles but no thread, and at last they said, see, now the clothes are done. The emperor himself came, along with his most distinguished courtiers, and both the swindlers raised one arm in the air as if they were holding something up and said, see, here are the trousers. Here is the dress coat. Here is the train. And they kept on in this manner. They're as light as spider webs. It's almost like having nothing on, but that's exactly their virtue. Yes, said all the courtiers. but they couldn't see a thing because there was nothing to see. "Would it please His Imperial Majesty most graciously to take off his clothes?" asked the swindlers. "Then we'll help him into the new ones in front of the big mirror." The emperor took off all his clothes, and the swindlers acted as if they were handing him each piece of new clothing that they had supposedly sewn. The emperor twisted and turned in front of the mirror. "Lord, how well they suit you. How delightfully they fit. What a pattern, what colors, what priceless attire. Outside, they're waiting with the canopy that will be raised above His Majesty for the procession," said the chief master of ceremonies. "All right, I'm ready," said the emperor. "They fit well, don't they?" Then he turned around one more time in front of the mirror, trying to look as if he were examining his finery. The chamberlains, who were going to carry the train, fumbled their hands over the floor as if they were picking up the train. They started walking, holding on to air. They didn't dare let on that they couldn't see a thing. Then the emperor walked in the procession beneath the lovely canopy, and all the people in the street and in the windows said, "Good Lord, our emperor's new clothes are beyond compare. What a lovely train he has on his coat. How heavenly it fits." No one wanted to admit that he couldn't see a thing, because then he would have been unfit for his position or very stupid. None of the emperor's clothes had ever aroused such admiration. "But he doesn't have a thing on," said a little child. "Good Lord, listen to the voice of the innocent," said the father. And one person whispered to the next what the child had said. "But he doesn't have anything on," the entire crowd cried at last. The emperor cringed because he thought they were right. But then he reasoned, "I have to make it through the procession." He held himself even prouder than before, and the chamberlains walked along carrying the train that was not there at all. By Hans Christian Andersen. What a great story. One of the nicest films I ever saw as a young man, and I saw it many times over the years because I had a copy of the film, was a movie about Hans Christian Andersen, and it was delightfully done and talked about his successes and some failures. But Danny Kaye was the star of that movie, I believe. It's been a long time since I saw it. And he sang some delightful versions of stories, like The Ugly Duckling and The Emperor's New Clothes. And that is how it was introduced to many young people, by seeing that film 50, 60 years ago. They learned some of his tales. He is a national treasure. In his home country, there are statues of him, and many people delight in his stories. So you are listening to EnlightenRadio.org, the Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. We are an internet radio program, and you can tune in every Monday at noon for the Storytelling Hour. And you can also go to talltales.enlightenradio.org and find many of our programs on as a podcast. So you can go back for a couple of years and listen to myself and Fanny Crawford, and sometimes Fanny Crawford by herself, because she originally did this show by herself. And it's fun to do the show, but not as much fun when Fanny and I do it together, because we can just let her hair down. So, let me catch you up to date on some storytelling news. Personally, this week I'll be going to two of the Washington County, Maryland libraries and doing some storytelling and some demonstrations of scientific principles using some handmade gadgets that I bring with me, so that this, any young people in the audience or any old people too can come up front and help me to demonstrate some of the principles that I will be talking about. But here, let me tell you what's happening in with stories in the round. We are looking toward August 19th, and we will have Andy Offit Irwin in Hagerstown at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike. And August 19th, Andy Offit Irwin will be performing. This will be his third consecutive year that he's performing, which is quite a treat for the audience. And I know that Andy enjoys being there. Of course, just a few weeks ago, Donald Davis was the featured teller, and he wowed a packed audience. I think more people than I've ever seen at Stories in the Round. Well, coming up in September, another one of the top storytellers in the country, Jim May. And he will be performing September 23rd at Stories in the Round. October 18th, Dovey Thomason will be here. November 15th, Mitch Capel. Oh, what a lineup Fanny has gathered for this year. Just think of those names. Donald Davis, Andy Offit Irwin, Jim May, Dovey Thomason, Mitch Capel, all top-tier storytellers and all who travel the country delighting their fans. And then, in December, just before Christmas time, December 23rd, Fanny Crawford will be the featured teller at Stories in the Round. That promises to be a wonderful program to end the series this year. The sixth year of Stories in the Round. So, we're talking about Hans Christian Andersen, the great storyteller, author, wrote so many wonderful, just wonderful stories and shared. And many of his stories had to do with ideas that were brought forth by his writing about inanimate objects, actually. But he personified them. Here is one of his favorite short tales, The Shepherdess and the Chimney Sweep. Have you ever seen a very old wooden cupboard, all black with age and carved with curlicues and foliage? That's exactly the kind that stood in the parlor. It was inherited from great-grandmother and carved with roses and tulips from top to bottom. It had the strangest curlicues, and in among them poked out tiny stag heads with jagged antlers. But in the middle of the cupboard, a whole man had been carved. He was certainly ridiculous to look at, and smirk he certainly did. You couldn't call it laughing. He had goat legs, tiny horns on his forehead, and a long beard. The children in the parlor always called him Billy Goat Leg, Field Marshal, Brigadier General, Commander, Sergeant. Because it was a hard name to say, and there aren't many who have such a title. And to carve him like that was certainly a feat. Yet there he was. He was always looking at the table under the mirror, because that's where an elegant little shepherdess made of porcelain stood. Her shoes were gilded, her gown charmingly tucked up with a red rose, and she also had a golden hat and shepherd's crook. She was lovely. She also had a golden... She was lovely. Right next to her stood a little chimney sweep, as black as coal, yet also made of porcelain. He was just as clean and handsome as anyone else. He was just pretending to be a chimney sweep. The porcelain maker could just as well have made him a prince, because it made no difference. There he stood, holding his ladder in such a charming manner, and with a pink face, as white as the girl's. That was actually a mistake, because he should have been at least a little sooty. He stood quite close to the shepherdess. They had both been set where they stood, and since they had been placed there, they had become engaged. They suited each other, after all. They were young, they were made of the same porcelain, and they were both equally fragile. Close to them stood another doll who was three times as big. It was an old Chinese man who could nod. He was also made of porcelain and said that he was grandfather to the little shepherdess, although he couldn't prove it. He claimed to have authority over her, and that's why he was nodding to Billy Goat Leg Field Marshal Brigadier General Commander Sergeant, who had asked for the hand of the little shepherdess. "Now there's a husband for you," said the Chinese man, "a husband that I think might well be made of mahogany. He can make you Mrs. Billy Goat Leg Field Marshal Brigadier General Commander Sergeant. He has a whole cupboard full of silverware, not to mention what he keeps in the secret cubbyholes." "I don't want to live inside the dark cupboard," said the little shepherdess. "People say he has 11 porcelain wives in there." "Then you can be the 12th, said the Chinese man. "Tonight, as soon as the old cupboard starts to creak, you will be married, as surely as I'm Chinese." Then he nodded his head and fell asleep. But the little shepherdess wept and looked at her heart's beloved, the porcelain chimney sweep. "I think I have to ask you to go with me out into the wide world," she said, "because we can't stay here." "I'll do anything you like," said the little chimney sweep. "Let's leave right now. I feel certain I can support you with my profession." "If only we could get down from this table," she said. "I won't be happy until we're out in the wide world." He reassured her and showed her where to put her little foot on the carved edges and the gilded foliage around the table leg. He also used his ladder. And then they reached the floor. But when they looked over at the old cupboard, there was such a commotion going on. All the carved deer were sticking their heads further out, lifting their antlers and turning their heads. Billy Goat Leg Field Marshal Brigadier General Commander Sergeant leaped high into the air and shouted to the old Chinese man, "They're running away, they're running away." Then they were both quite frightened and quickly jumped into the drawer beneath the window seat. Inside lay three or four incomplete decks of cards and a little puppet theater that had been cobbled together. As play was being performed, and all the queens, both diamonds and hearts, clubs and spades, sat in the front row, fanning themselves with their tulips. Behind them stood all the jacks, displaying their heads both up and down, the way cards do. The play was about two lovers who couldn't be together, and the shepherdess cried because it was just like her own story. "I can't stand any more of this," she said. "I have to get out of this drawer." But when they came out onto the floor and looked up at the table, the old Chinese man was awake and his body was wobbling all over because his lower half was all of one piece. "Here comes the Chinese man," shrieked the little shepherdess, and then she fell to her porcelain knees. She was in such despair. "I have an idea," said the chimney sweep. "Why don't we crawl into the big potpourri jar that's standing in the corner? We can lie there with the roses and lavender and throw salt in his eyes when he comes near." "Oh, boy, I wouldn't recommend it," she said. And besides, I happened to know that the Chinese man and the potpourri jar were once engaged, and a little affection always remains when you've been in love like that. Now, we have no choice but to go out into the wide world. Are you sure you have the courage to go with me out into the wide world? Asked the chimney sweep. Have you considered how big it is and that we'd never be able to come back here? Yes, I have, she said. The chimney sweep stared at her hand, and then he said, my path goes through the chimney. Are you sure you have the courage to crawl with me through the wood stove, through both the belly and the pipe? Then we'll be into the chimney, and that's where I know how to use my skills. We'll climb so high that they won't be able to reach us, and the very top is an opening that leads out into the wide world. And he led her over to the door of the stove. How black it looks in there, she said. But she followed him, both through the belly and through the pipe, where it was pitch black night. Now we're inside the chimney, he said, and look, look, up above the loveliest star is shining. It was a real star in the sky that was shining down on them, as if to show them the way. And they crawled and climbed. It was an awfully long way. Higher and higher. But he lifted and helped her. He held on to her and showed her the best places to set her little porcelain feet. Then they reached all the way up to the very edge of the chimney and sat down on it. Because they were tired, and of course, and they had every right to be. The sky and all its stars were overhead. All the rooftops in town were below them. They looked all around, far out into the world. The poor shepherdess had never dreamed it would be like this. She leaned her little head against the chimney sweep, and then she wept so hard that the gold came off her sash. It's too much. I can't stand it. The world is much too big. If only I were back on the little table under the mirror. I'll never be happy until I'm back there again. I've followed you out into the wide world, so now you can follow me home if you're the least bit fond of me. And a chimney sweep spoke sensibly to her, talking about the Chinese man and Billy Goat Leg Field Marshal Brigadier General Commander Sergeant. But she sobbed even harder and kissed her little chimney sweep. So he had no choice but to give in, even though it was a mistake. So they crawled with great difficulty back down the chimney. They crept through the pipe and the belly of the stove. It wasn't at all pleasant. Then they stood inside the dark stove. There they waited behind the door to find out what was going on in the room. It was very quiet. They peeked out. There in the middle of the floor lay the old Chinese man. He had fallen off the table when he tried to come after them, and now he was broken in three pieces. His whole back had come off in one piece, and his head had rolled into a corner. Billy Goat Leg Field Marshal Brigadier General Commander Sergeant stood where he always stood, thinking things over. How awful, said the shepherdess. Grandfather has been smashed to bits, and it's all our fault. I'll never be able to endure it. And she started wringing her tiny little hands. He can still be mended, said the chimney sweep. He can be easily mended. Don't take it so hard. When they glue on his back and put a strong rivet in his neck, he'll be as good as new and able to say many more unpleasant things to us. Do you really think so? She said. And then they climbed back up onto the table where they had stood before. Well, look how far we got, said the chimney sweep. We could have saved ourselves all that trouble. If only we had old grandfather mended, said the shepherdess. Do you think it's expensive? And mended he was. The family had his back glued on, and a strong rivet was put in the nape of his neck. He was as good as new, though he could no longer nod. You've certainly grown haughty since you were smashed to pieces, said Billy Goat Legfield, Marshal Brigadier General Commander Sergeant. But I don't think that's anything to brag about. Is she going to be mine, or isn't she? The chimney sweep and the little shepherdess gave the old Chinese man such pleading looks. They were so afraid that he would nod. But he couldn't. And he felt uncomfortable telling a stranger that he had a permanent rivet in the back of his neck. So the porcelain couple stayed together, and they blessed grandfather's rivet and loved each other until they were broke. What a cool story. And when Anderson wrote his stories, they always had some kind of moral to them or meaning. And he would read his stories to audiences, and he didn't really explain them. He just let the audience listen to the words, follow the story, and they could discuss among themselves after the performance just what the message was in that story. Sometimes, in doing storytelling programs, especially with a young audience, it's interesting to engage them after a tale and say, well, what do you think you can learn from that story? And it's amazing. Young people, even young people down to the age of 5 or 6, often come up with the most wonderful answers. Like they should have been happy where they were. They shouldn't have taken a chance. They could have fallen off that off the cupboard and been smashed to pieces. And the poor old Chinaman, that wasn't nice of them to run away, and he had to try to come and get them, and he got broke. And the other guy, he shouldn't have had another wife. He already had 11. That's too much. These are all words I've heard from youngsters after a performance of that story. You are listening to EnlightenRadio.org, the Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Stash Zielkowski, flying single today because Fanny is at a family reunion off in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. So, let's see, what can I tell you about what's happening in the world of storytelling? The new Storytelling Guild, the Antietam Storytelling Guild, has a Liars Contest coming up in September, and that's going to be in Hagerstown at the Flying Camel, which is a place where you can get good food, good drinks, and they support the arts there. And we'll be telling stories that have some exaggerations in them. And there's always a $25 prize at our Liars Contest. Also, we have in October at the Flying Camel, on October 19th, we have storyteller Adam Booth, West Virginia storyteller who lives in Shepherdstown and who travels from Shepherdstown all over the country. Adam is one of the premier young storytellers in the country, and he is very busy sharing his wonderful talent. So, even before October, people can see and hear Adam on August 13th. He will be at Shepherd University at Reynolds Hall. And I'm led to believe he will be telling one of his newest stories in his 20th century series, where he has developed a new story for each decade and a mixture in each story of some classic tales, some legends, folklore, mixed in with some real elements of that particular decade. And he is just a marvelous teller. September 17th, Claire Murphy, coming from Ireland. Irish-born storyteller, been telling stories for the past 10 years on stages around the world, including at the Globe and National Theatres in London and in Brazil. Claire is also a storytelling consultant for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at NASA. And her program on September 17th will be The Universe. I'm looking forward to that. Then in October, Tim Tingle. Tim is an Oklahoma Choctaw and award-winning author and storyteller. Tim has shared stories and music on his native flute and drum at venues including the Kennedy Center, the Library of Congress, and the National Museum of the American Indian, a great favorite among all story lovers. And on November 12th, Bill Harley, coming from Massachusetts. Of course, he'll bring along his guitar, and he does narrative songs and stories, both original and traditional. And he writes genuine, his own songs and stories are about growing up, schooling, what it is to be human, connections with one another and with the planet. So that's the rest of the program for the Speak Story series. And you can get more information about the Speak Story series at www.speakstoryseries.com. There you can find information and a contact number. So if you want to speak to a person about it, they will get back to you. All right. So now let's take a look into the world of Mr. Anderson, Hans Christian Andersen. One of the things that many people don't know about him, and once they get interested in him and take a look into his life and read something about his the different things he did, he was great at cutting shadow pictures out of paper using scissors. He would manipulate the scissors and the paper in his hand and come up with incredible and absolutely incredible pictures. And I know of one storyteller who comes from Utah and then from California, who portrays Hans Christian Andersen. And I have seen him while standing on stage and telling an Andersen story. He has a large pair of scissors in his hands and a blank piece of paper. And he folds and cuts and trims and folds and cuts. And when he's finished, he will open the paper. And there before your very eyes is a picture that characterizes the story he just told. It's just a wonderful thing to see that. So, one of Andersen's most well-known stories, The Ugly Duckling, truly a classical story. It is a lovely song written about the ugly duckling that uses his words. And I thought we might take a look at that. Now, and I think we have enough time to do the whole thing. It was, let's see, here it is. How does it begin? It was so lovely out in the country. It was summer. The rye was yellow, the oats were green, the hay had been gathered in stacks down in the green meadows. That's where the stork was walking around on his long red legs, speaking Egyptian, because that was the language he had learned from his mother. Surrounding the fields and meadows were great forests, and in the middle of the forest were deep lakes. Yes, it was truly lovely out in the country. In the midst of the sunshine stood an old estate with a deep moat all around. From the walls and down to the water grew huge dock leaves that were so tall that little children could stand upright under the largest of them. It was just as wild in there as in the thickest forest, and this was where a duck was sitting on her nest. She had to sit there to hatch her little ducklings, but now she was getting tired of it all and because it was taking such a long time, and she rarely had visitors. The other ducks were more fond of swimming around in the moat than running over to sit under a dock leaf to chat with her. Finally, one egg cracked open after the other. "Peep, peep," they said. All the egg yolks had come alive and were sticking out their heads. "Quack, quack," she said. And they all rushed out as fast as they could and looked all around in the green leaves. Their mother let them look as much as they liked because green is good for the eyes. "How big the world is," said the youngsters, because now they had quite a bit more room than when they were inside the eggs. "You think this is the whole world?" said the mother. "It stretches far to the other side of the garden, all the way to the pastor's field, although I've never been that far. But you're all here now, aren't you?" And then she got up. "Oh, no, I don't have all of you. The biggest egg is still lying there. How long is it going to take? I'm getting very tired of this." And then, excuse me, she'd sat down again. "So how's it going?" said an old duck who came to visit. "One egg is taking such a long time," said the duck on the nest. "It won't crack open, but take a look at the others. They're the loveliest ducklings I've ever seen. They all look like their father, the rogue who never comes to see me." "Let me look at the egg, and that won't crack open," said the old duck. "I'll bet it's a turkey egg. I was once fooled like that myself, and I had my share of troubles with those youngsters because they're afraid of the water. I couldn't get them to go in, let me tell you. I quacked and snapped, but it did no good. Let me see that egg. It's a turkey egg. All right, just leave it here and go teach the other children to swim." "I think I'll sit on it for a while longer," said the duck. "I've been sitting here this long. I might as well sit here the rest of the summer." "Be my guest," said the old duck, and then she left. Finally, the big egg cracked open. "Peep, peep," said the youngster and tumbled out. He was big and hideous. The duck looked at him. "That's certainly an awfully big duckling," she said. "None of the others look like that. He couldn't be a turkey chick, could he? Well, we shall soon see. Into the water he goes, even if I have to kick him in myself." The next day, the weather was gloriously beautiful. The sun shone on all the green dock plants. The mother duck and her whole family went down to the moat. Splash, she jumped into the water. "Quack, quack," she said. One duckling after the other plopped in the water. The water washed over their heads, but they popped up at once and floated around beautifully. The legs moved on their own, and all of them were in the water. Even the hideous gray youngster was swimming along. "No, he's not a turkey," she said. "Look how beautifully he uses his legs. How erect he holds himself. That's my child. Actually, he's quite handsome if you take a good look. Quack, quack. Come along with me, and I'll take you out into the world and introduce you to the duckyard. But stay close to me so that no one steps on you, and watch out for the cats." And then they went into the duckyard. There was a terrible ruckus going on because two families were fighting over an eel head, and then the cat ended up getting it. "See, that's how things go in the world," said the mother duck, licking her bill, because she too would have liked to have that eel head. "Use your legs now. See if you can't hurry up and dip your necks to the old duck over there. She's the most refined of anyone here. She has Spanish blood. That's why she's so fat. And see there? She has a red rag around her leg. That's a remarkably lovely thing and the highest honor any duck can be given. So it's important that they won't get rid of her. Both animals and humans must respect her. Don't put your legs together. A well-mannered duckling keeps his legs far apart, just like father and mother. Come on now. Now dip your neck and say quack." And that's what they did. But the other duck standing around looked at them and said quite loudly, "Look at this. Now we've got to deal with that bunch too, as if there weren't enough of us already. And, just take a look at that duckling. We're not going to put up with him." And one of the ducks flew over promptly, bit him on the back of the neck. "Leave him alone," said the mother. "He's not hurting anyone." "Yes, but he's too big and too odd-looking, so he's going to be pushed around." "What handsome children that mother has," said the old duck with the rag around her leg. "All of them so handsome except for that one. Ooh, he didn't turn out too well. I wish she could hatch that one over again." "That's not possible, Your Grace," said the mother duck. He may not be handsome, but he has genuinely good nature, and he swims as beautifully as any of the others. I'd venture to say even a little better. I think he'll be handsome when he grows up, or with time he might get a little smaller. He was too long in the egg, and that's why he isn't the right shape. Then she plucked at the back of his neck and smoothed out his feathers. Besides, he's a drake, she said, so it doesn't matter as much. I think he'll turn out to be strong, and I'm sure he'll win a place for himself. The other ducklings are so charming, said the old duck. Make yourselves at home, and if you happen to find an eel head, you can bring it to me. As time went on, the ducks bit him, and the hens pecked at him, and the maid, who was supposed to feed the animals, gave him a kick with her foot. Whew. In the morning, the wild ducks flew up, and they looked at their new companion. Who on earth are you? You're awfully hideous, said the wild ducks, but that doesn't matter to us, provided you don't marry anyone in our family. It wasn't so long ago that they had come out of their eggs, and I guess that's why they were so brash. Listen, my friend, they said, you're so hideous that we actually like you. Want to come along and be a migrating bird? Nearby, in another marsh, there are some heavenly sweet wild geese, all of them young ladies, who could say, quack, you're in a position to be a success because you're so hideous. Bang, boom, suddenly they heard overhead, both the wild geese fell dead into the reeds, and the water turned blood red. The hunters lay all around the marsh. Some were even up in the tree branches that stretched far out over the reeds. Blue smoke lifted like the clouds among the trees and hovered far out in the water. Through the mud came the hunting dogs. Splash, splash, reeds and rushes swayed on all sides. What a horror it was for the poor duckling. He turned his head to tuck it under his wing, but just at that moment, a huge, terrifying dog stopped right next to him. His tongue hanging out of the mouth and his eyes shining. He lowered his jaws toward the duckling, showed his teeth, and he left without taking him. Oh, thank God, said the duckling. I'm so hideous that not even the dog wanted to bite me. Oh, he hid for the rest of the day. Toward evening, he reached a poor little farmhouse, so wretched that it couldn't make up its mind which way to fall, and that's why it was still standing. Inside lived an old woman with her cat and her hen. The cat, who was called Sunny, could arch his back and purr. He could even throw off sparks, but for that you had to stroke his fur the wrong way. The hen had very short legs, and that's why she was called Henny Shortlegs. She was good at laying eggs, and the woman was as fond of her as her own child. And so the duckling was accepted on a trial basis for 3 weeks, but no eggs appeared. The cat was master of the house, and the hen was the mistress. They both kept on saying, we and the rest of the world, because they thought they were half of it. The duckling thought it might be possible to have another opinion, but the hen wouldn't stand for it. Can you lay eggs? She asked. No. Well, then you'd better keep your mouth shut. And the cat said, can you arch your back, purr, and throw sparks? No. Well, then we don't want to hear from you when sensible people are talking. The duckling was... He had such a strange desire to float on the water that at last he couldn't resist. He had to tell the hen. What's come over you? She asked. You don't have anything to do. That's why you get such ideas into your head. Lay eggs or purr and it will pass. But it's lovely to float on the water. Oh, that's a great pleasure, all right, said the hen. You must be crazy. Ask the cat. He's the smartest one I know, whether he likes floating on water or diving underneath. Or you can ask our mistress, the old woman. There's no one wiser than her in the whole world. Do you think she wants to float and get water on her head? You don't understand me, said the duckling. Well, if we don't understand you, then who does? You'll never be smarter than the cat or the old woman, not to mention myself. Stop making a fuss, child, and thank your creator for all the kindness that has been shown to you. Haven't you ended up in a warm house with companions that you can learn something from? Finally, the duckling said, I think I'll go out into the wide world. Well, go ahead, said the hen. And so he left. Then autumn came. The leaves in the forest turned brown and yellow. The wind seized hold of them, so they danced around, and the sky looked cold. Clouds hung heavy with hail and snowflakes, and on the fence stood a raven, shrieking,
wow, wow,
from sheer cold. Yes, you could end up freezing just by thinking about it. One evening, as the sun was setting gloriously, a whole flock of lovely big birds came out of the thickets. Duckling had never seen anything so beautiful. They were dazzling white with long, supple necks. They were swans. They made quite a wondrous sound. He watched them as they took off and climbed so high. The little ugly duckling felt quite strange. He spun around in the water like a wheel, stretching its neck high up into the air after them, uttering a cry so loud and strange that it scared him. Oh, he couldn't forget these lovely birds, those happy birds. As soon as he lost sight of them, he dove straight down to the bottom. When he came back up, he was practically beside himself. He didn't know what those birds were, what they were called, or where they were flying, but he loved them as he had never loved anyone else. He didn't envy them in the least. How could he even think of wishing for such loveliness? He would have been happy if the ducks had merely allowed him to stay among them, the poor ugly creature. The winter was so cold. The duckling had to swim around in order to keep it from freezing over, but every night the hole in which he was swimming grew smaller and smaller. It froze so hard that the icy crust crackled. The duckling had to keep moving his legs or the water would close up. At last he grew so weak that he lay quite still and then was frozen into the ice. Early in the morning a farmer appeared. He saw the duckling, went out, smashed the ice to bits with his wooden clog, and carried the bird home to his wife. There the duckling was revived. The children wanted to play with him, but the duckling thought they were trying to hurt him and flew in terror right into the milk basin, so the milk splashed all over the room. The farmer's wife screamed and flapped her hands in the air. Then the duckling flew into the trough of butter and then into the flour barrel and out again. What a sight he was. The farmer's wife screamed and swung at him with the hearth tongs, and the children tumbled all over each other to catch the duckling. As they laughed and shrieked, it was a good thing that the door stood open. Out he rushed into the bushes in the newly fallen snow. And there he lay, as if in a daze. But it would be much too sad to recount all the suffering and misery he had to endure that harsh winter. Lying in the marsh among the rushes, when the sunshine once again began to feel warm, the larks sang. It was lovely springtime. All of a sudden he lifted his wings. They flapped stronger than before and powerfully carried him away. Before he even knew it, it was in a great garden where the apple trees stood in bloom, where the lilacs hung fragrantly on their long green boughs, all the way down to the winding waterway. Oh, it was so lovely there, so springtime fresh. And right in front of him, out of the thickets, came three lovely white swans. They ruffled their feathers and floated so lightly on the water. The duckling recognized the magnificent creatures and was stirred by a strange sadness. I'll fly over to those royal birds, and they'll peck me to death because someone like me, who is so hideous, dares approach them. But it doesn't matter. Better to be killed by them than to be nipped by the ducks and pecked by the hens, kicked by the maid who tends the chicken coop, and to suffer so terribly all winter. And he flew out into the water and swam over to the swans. They saw him gliding toward him with his ruffled feathers. Go ahead and kill me, he said, the poor bird, and he bent his head down to the surface of the water. And he waited for death. But what did he see in the clear water? He saw beneath him his own image, and he was no longer a clumsy, grayish-black bird, horrid and hideous. He was a swan. It doesn't matter if you're born in a duckyard when you've been lying inside a swan's egg. He actually felt glad about all the suffering and hardships he had endured. Now he could appreciate his happiness and all the loveliness that waited him, and the great swans swam all around him, stroking him with their bills. They threw bread and grain into the water, the little children on the bank, and the youngest of them cried, "There's a new one!" And the other children shouted joyfully, "Yes, a new one has arrived!" And they clapped their hands and danced around. They ran to find father and mother. Bread and cakes were tossed into the water, and they all said, "The new one is the most beautiful of all, so young and so lovely." And the old swans bowed to him. Then he felt quite bashful and tucked his head behind his wings. He didn't know what to make of it, but he was too happy, but not the least bit proud, because a good heart is never proud. He thought about how he had been badgered and scorned, and now he heard everyone say that he was the loveliest of all the lovely birds. The lilacs dipped their boughs all the way down to him in the water. The sun shone so warm and so fine. Then he ruffled his feathers, raised his slender neck, and rejoiced with all his heart. "I never dreamed of so much happiness when I was the ugly duckling." Well, Mr. Anderson has really done a great job on that one. That story is often told in a much simpler version, as a song. So let me try this. "There once was an ugly duckling with feathers all stubby and brown, and the other birds in so many words said, 'Get out of town. Get out, get out, get out of town.' And he went with a quack and a waddle and a quack in a flurry of eider down. That poor little ugly duckling went wandering far and near, but at every place they said to his face, 'Now get out of here.' And he went with a quack and a waddle and a quack and a very unhappy tear. All through the winter he hid himself away, ashamed to show his face, afraid of what others might say. All through the winter in a lonely clump of weeds, till a flock of swans spied him there and said, 'You are a very fine swan indeed.' 'A swan? Me? A swan? Oh, no, go on. Yes, you're a swan. Take a look, and you'll see.' And he looked, and he saw, and he said, 'I am a swan. Wee.' And he finished with, 'I'm not such an ugly duckling, no feathers all stubby and brown, for in fact these words in so many words said, the best in town. Not a quack, or a waddle, or a waddle, or a quack, but a glide and a whistle and a snowy white back, and a head so noble and high. Say, who's an ugly duckling? Not I.'" And that's the song that tells the story, which is a lot shorter than the real story. You've been listening to EnlightenRadio.org, the Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And now it's time for us to say goodbye. We're closing out this week's show. For the noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, coming to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to
Outlaw Country.
Outlaw Country.